Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. I guess this evening, just this, haven't really thought at all about the sort of giving the Dhamma talk. I kind of intentionally decided to really try to just give one from the heart, not to try to plan it or anything. And but when Ajahn Yatiko asked me at the mealtime if I would be willing to share tonight, his first thing that came to my mind was, well, we're entering the winter retreat pretty soon, just a couple days, and just thought that I could, you know, just share some words, encouragement, you know, kind of giving some reflections about maybe skillful ways to enter into it, kind of talk about expectations or something, you know, kind of along those lines. That's just what immediately popped into my head. So just during the sit, just kind of in my mind, I was sort of just going through all the individuals who are here, and you know, it's quite a wide, you know, range of people. You know, people that, you know, especially when the retreat starts, you know, Lumpur will be back. You know, somebody's been on retreat, or, you know, doing retreats for probably, you know, 40 years now. To you know, some of us who are could be our, you know, first or second retreat. And also just say for the monastic community, like we'll have certain expectations, certain sets of practices that we'll be taking on, or certain form that we take on during the retreat. But the supporters who've lay supporters who've come to sort of run the monastery while we're here, you know, they'll have a different, completely different set of expectations, and level of activity will be different. And then there's certain people here who are just our normal guests at the monastery, come quite frequently, but will probably, hopefully, be plugging into the retreat as well. So, you know, all of us who are here who will be partaking in the retreat, it's a, quite a range of how we'll be participating in it. So we, you know, we say winter retreat, but it's many things to many different people. And even to us as individuals, it'll be many different things throughout the 3 months. You know, things will change, and we may have certain expectations at the beginning. We have really high hopes and high expectations, and you know, put forth a lot of energy. But then, you know, something might happen. We might get a big injury, or we might get sick, or, you know, relative may get sick or pass away or something like that, and that will change our retreat. Even just if someone else's, you know, a close friend in the monastery, their parent dies or something like that, you know, that will potentially change the retreat. I mean, it's interesting to me too that I don't know exactly, can't remember exactly when the first retreats I started doing, how long ago that's been. It's been quite a long time, but just, you know, my, you know, expectations and attitudes, you know, towards retreats has changed quite a bit. And it was over a month ago, I was giving a Dhamma talk, and just mentioned at that point, it's like, you know, 5 weeks from now, we'll be starting the retreat. And you sort of, he was encouraging people to, you know, think about that now. You know, we're starting, you know, start setting your mind state to, you know, setting things aside, or, you know, finishing business. So then when the date does arrive for the beginning of the retreat, it's not kind of like we're still rushing to finish things. And it's quite interesting in the last, you know, 4.5 weeks, 5 weeks, since that talk, and there has been a lot of activity, you know, happening here, the Thanksgiving retreat, Christmas, all the people coming and going, you know, a lot of work projects that needed to get done that were quite important, especially with the really heavy rains. You know, there was some damage to the monastery property, so we had to fix those things. We had to get on top of it. So there was a lot of activity, but it does seem like that, you know, people have been. You know, setting their minds. It's like I've heard a lot of people talking about it. It doesn't seem like it's going to be like this big shock that, oh wow, we're on retreat. You know, just in a couple of days, not prepared for it. So it seems like we have a good kind of transition right now. There's a lot of positive energy. It kind of feels like going into it. And that's my perception. I think for everybody, just one way to sort of contemplate, you know, the sort of the beginning of the retreat is that it is an unknown, and just, you know, it's just going into it with that attitude, is sort of a real openness, kind of a gentleness. You're not really like saying you're not like, you know, having this sort of like, okay, I'm going to accomplish this or I'm going to accomplish that. It is good to you know, have a theme, to even to set determinations, call aditanas, you know, like taking on special practices. I think that can be very skillful and very helpful for individuals. You know, if it's held in the right way, those can be, you know, real strong aids to the practice. So I actually do encourage, you know, people to you know, take things on like that. But it is to have, you know, an attitude of sort of inquiry, investigation with it. You know, to take those things on, and like if you're wanting to give up sugar or give up coffee, or you'd only have one meal, you know, a day during the retreat, or you know, to get up at 3 a.m. every day to do Tai Chi or something like that. You know, it's to use it as a way of investigating your own mind, as a way of, you know, sometimes when I do these practices, if I, you know, sort of fail at them, I can, you know, kind of beat myself up, or kind of feel bad about it, or something like that. But if you use it with this investigation, you just watch, you know, like I was just thinking earlier about, you know, taking the aditana, the determination to, you know, you get up at 3 o'clock every morning. You know, it's like, well, you made that determination at 3 p.m. And of course, when 3 a.m. comes around, 3 a.m., that's, you know, completely different reality. And it's, you know, going to be quite easy to say, well, I didn't say I couldn't set the snooze, you know, and then 4:15 comes around and you got to get up to get down to morning puja, and then you feel bad about it all day. But it's one thing, one of my early teachers told me, that sort of setting determinations, is that oftentimes, like, we'll set a determination, like, okay, I'm going to get up at 3 o'clock every morning, and then you don't do it, and then it's like, well, okay, I failed. I'm not going to do that. Well, the advice he gave me, which I really liked, was, well, just redetermine it. You know, just because you failed at it once. You know, like if you've gone like an entire week without sugar in the morning, or sugar all day, and then you slip, and you have some. It's like it's so easy to say, okay, well, I failed, so I'm not gonna continue with that anymore. But it's you know, to acknowledge it, to say, okay, yeah, you know, I had this determination, this is what I wanted to do, but I failed. And then to, you know, acknowledge that, to see what that feels like, but then to, you know, to retake it and recommit to it. And so with, you know, practices like determinations, that's really a skillful way to do it, because you know, if you set determinations and then you don't follow through with them, it it can create a negative self-image. You can sort of be setting yourself up to be thinking of yourself as a failure, or it's a real strong, if you set a strong determination, I'm going to do this, and you don't, it is karma. It's an action, and you're setting a precedent. So like if you fail that particular determination that you've set, and then it's much more likely, or you're setting the sort of conditions where in the future, if you set determinations or practices that you wish to do, you have that in the back of your mind that I failed at that one, so I'm probably going to fail at this one as well. That's a potential. But if you do, like this way this teacher described it to me, if you do fail, but then you clearly acknowledge that and you learn from it, why did I fail? Was there lack of mindfulness in the moment, or was there is there some strong emotion going on that I didn't want to deal with? And it was just sort of, some sort of perverted kind of self-torture to yourself. Self-sabotaging or some action like that. Just, investigate, why did I do that? What was the cause? And then, again, say just redetermining. And then redetermining is then in the future is when you do take on these practices again or other practices, you'll have that in the back of your mind too. It's I did fail that one time, but then, I didn't have any more sugar for the next 2 months. So give yourself positive, learn from it, and then go forward. When I was originally thinking about this talk too, we're going to be entering into space of what's kind of called noble silence. There'll be signs on the door, sort of warning, instructing or informing. I guess that's the word I'm looking for. Informing people that arrive that aren't sort of part of the community, that we're in noble silence, not engaging in sort of social conversations or friendly sort of chit chat. The lay supporters who are here, they've been kind of encouraged or asked if they see somebody who's not familiar to them, and that person sort of walking around looking like they're wanting some instruction or some help, or just not totally at ease here. They're hopefully, there'll be somebody that will spot them, and the lay crew is as part of their helping us, the monastics, people that will be on the retreat, and Debbie and Beth as well, kind of those of us that are going to be on the retreat. So we don't, as monastics, we have this 3-month period, we can take it as a time to sit down, talking, and so even if we do see people around the monastery, we don't necessarily have to feel that's our duty or our responsibility. Whereas 9 months of the year it is, and we do have a responsibility to be kind hosts to people. But during this retreat period, we can have that freedom, that ability to know that we don't have to engage people. Importantly, even engaging each other, there's a freedom there that we can set that aside and focus more inwardly on our own practices, our own internal life. What's happening there? What thoughts are arising? What emotions do we have? What feelings? And when I was thinking about this, just talking about it sounds so lovely. That's great. I can't wait. A couple more days we're going to do that. But again, often the reality of that is quite different. It's like setting that intention to really be practicing noble silence. And for me, You know, it's like when I, you know, am around other people, it's like there's so many ways that we pick up, you know, sort of, you know, just trying to work our, just trying to get our ourselves through the day, just trying to get ourselves through the world. And we're always trying to pick up, you know, clues to, you know, what other people are thinking or other people are feeling, or you know, it's like, if, you know, is this person angry today, or is this person happy today, or, you know, should I say something to them, or shouldn't I say something to them? You know, we'll be, you know, like watching their facial expressions, we'll be watching how they hold their body. And a big part of that is like, you know, what kind of speech are they using? You know, is it, are they speaking in a way that's kind and gentle, or are they, you know, distracted, and are they jokey, or are they critical? You know, are they angry? Is their speech angry? And so, you know, like how you will interact with that person oftentimes can be, you know, determined just by what you're hearing. You know, with the, what type of speech that person is using. So when, you know, a lot of people go into silence, you know, it's like one of our major ways of being able to, you know, feel safe, how we feel safe and around other people, how we communicate. And it's not even communication through verbal expression, but just sort of like, you know, like walking through a crowded room, you know, it's like, you know, do you want to give a certain person more space or less space? And oftentimes it's like you will know that by paying attention to how they're speaking. But when you take that away, there is a sort of that you're taking away one of your senses. And that can at first be kind of shocking, or you know, to me, it sometimes it can almost be frightening, because it's just like, well, I don't know how to be. I don't know how to be in the world in that environment. It's one whole perception is taken away. And sometimes, just internally, when I stop talking, it's like you know, sometimes it's quite joyful. It's quite, you know, oh, I don't have to say anything. Sometimes, and I think it's universal, or it's quite common, is that sometimes like anger will come up for a lot of people when just being in silence. It's just you know, it's like it's just a habitual. It's something that we do every day. And it's like even when you try, if you take on a practice of not speaking, it's really, really difficult to do. You know, it's like at least once or twice someone's going to ask you a really important question that does need to be answered. And if you've taken that on as a practice, you might have to break it just to really help somebody out, to be kind, to be compassionate. And so even, you know, with a real strong determination, it can be done, but you might have to break it. All the kind of determinations actually, you know, might be challenged that way. And so, but yeah, just like if around silence, it's just wanting to be more quiet. Just if the habitual mind, just the way we always carry ourselves, you know, is to act in a particular way, just to say, okay, on Wednesday I'm not speaking, you know, it's, you're changing a whole part of your personality. You know, there can be negative consequences to that. And so it's not that is bad or wrong. It's good to know that is a potential. So if you do see that happening, you know, not to think, oh, this is a bad practice, I shouldn't be doing this, I really should go and chat with somebody in the book room or something like that. It's just to note, okay, you know, there's aversion arising, and you know, we have changed. You know, as soon as the retreat starts, you know, a lot of our, you know, the last 9 months, everything that we've been doing is, you know, a lot of those conditions are changing, and that might be jarring at the beginning. So just to, I think that's kind of what I wanted to say, just, you know, to bring that to light, so everybody, you know, kind of is aware that that's a potential, that we think we're going to go, okay, great, 3 months, we're going to be on retreat, it's going to be so blissful. But the beginning might be blissful. Hopefully it is, but there's potential it won't be. Just to know that. 1 year, I really did, I took it on as a aditana, to for the first month of the retreat, he really determined that my determination wasn't not to speak, but was only speak if I was spoken to. So I thought that was a really nice sort of, if you know, people did need to talk to me, if they did need questions, you know, answered or something like that, you know, I'm available to do that. And but I just, because I think actually the Buddha actually doesn't encourage, you know, total silence, you know, but as a practice. But so I didn't take on total silence, but it was just like, I'm not going to be engaged, I'm not going to be the one that engages and starts the conversation. And it was quite an interesting experience. I remember the first 2 weeks, it was just, the mind was just continually just wanting to ask questions. You know, it was like, I remember coming in, it's like, even during the retreat, there's just certain things that happen throughout the day, like, you know, like what time are we going to chant Patimokkha, you know, are we going to do it, you know, up above, are we going to do it down here, or, you know, what time are we leaving for alms round, does this monk need to go see the doctor on the alms round, so does that mean we have to leave early, or, you know, who's going to go on the alms round, or did anybody clean this cup that's sitting here on the table that looks clean but it's not put away, you know, just 100 questions, you know, the mind, 1,000 questions the mind can ask, and the mind wants to know what's the answer. And it was, the thing that blew me away about this practice was I never, the questions were there, every single question got answered, and I never had to ask the question. It was just like everything, you know, it was like at a certain point Lumpur did say, you know, we're going to do Patimokkha down here, or, you know, it was mentioned that, you know, this monk is not going to rehab, you know, for the retreat, so we don't have to leave at an early time. So every single question got answered, and I never once had to open my mouth. It was just like, it was a miracle. I couldn't believe it. And the beautiful thing was, it was after about 2 weeks, the questions stopped coming. It actually did. The mind did start quieting down, but it was a struggle for that first 2 weeks. It just, you know, it was actually almost as if, because I wasn't asking the question, the mind was like testing me. Like it started asking more questions. I don't know if it actually did ask more questions. I became more aware of them. Maybe they were that many in there before, but because I was just giving them the space, or actually just forcing them to be there and not driving them away by asking the questions. They just continued to, eventually just sort of, you know, say, I don't know if it was dispassion or, but just the energy, because I wasn't putting in the energy to ask the questions. It just slowed down naturally, completely on its own. I think also too, just you know, being on retreat and just, you know, having, you know, just like these little warnings that, you know, like it could actually be, you know, a little more turmoil or just a little more difficult for us than, you know, the imagining, you know, we have of, oh yeah, just okay, we set the work down and I'll just be able to meditate and I'm gonna get up at 3 a.m, I'm gonna sit for 2 hours before the morning puja, and that way I'll be really peaceful. You know, have these ideas. And, you know, they might work out, but they may not. And, you know, and so I guess I'm going with this is that, and also, to, and I'm kind of changing the subject here, is that with so many different people being part of the retreat and actually having completely different expectations, you know, it's like, so, like, definitely the Anagarikas, you know, it's like this is going to be just, you know, really great for them because they're not going to have to be in the kitchen. It's like, you know, the most stressful, you know, thing that happens in the monastery is you know, food preparation. There's so much energy is put into that. One year when I was the work monk, I kept a really, really, you know, detailed records of how many people worked every job. And we built like 4 cabins that year, the solar array, and did all the solar systems, and it was the elders' cabins and stuff like that. And with all the work projects that we did in the monastery, we still spent more hours in the kitchen than we did everything else. Just, you know, how much effort was put into the kitchen with, you know, breakfast, teas, and the one prawl cleanups, and then just the cooking and cleanup. It's a lot of effort goes into the kitchen. So the kitchen manager and everybody that helps out, it's a lot of work. And so for the, you know, for the Anagarikas, you know, being on a retreat is just going to be this probably blissful experience of just not being in the kitchen, possibly. Whereas for other people, it's going to be, you know, it's more work. It's coming in and, you know, to helping out or retreat. There are just people from our neighbors coming in, that, you know, different experience for them as well. And so just as a reminder and encouragement to just, you know, support, you know, just to help support each other. Just kind of coming into the retreat with not really a really fixed expectation of this is what I want to do or this is what I want to accomplish. And then, you know, sort of maybe getting other people might have other expectations or other views about what the retreat is going to be, and that might clash with our view. So, like, you know, I just talking about the beauty of silence, but, you know, maybe somebody else has the idea that this is going to be a great 3-month period just to sort of talk to everybody. You know, it's like, can we hold that? Can we be, you know, okay with that? You know, not to make it an issue, you know, to be on retreat and just try to support everybody, support each other, support everybody in the community. Maybe just to make it a time for, you know, understanding our own minds, understanding why we are the way we are, understanding, you know, what our desires are, what our clinging, where do we hold on to things, where do we cause, you know, in our own suffering. And even if we don't even find out, you know, the answer of how to overcome that, if we can even just see that much, you know, that's the First Noble Truth. And you know, that would be a wonderful experience, just to be able to see that, how we, you know, have expectations, and does that create suffering for us? And ideally, it'd be great if then we were able to just develop practices to be able to overcome that. But I think, you know, part of it is learning to, you know, just be accepting, to be okay with each other, you know, to not, if you see somebody struggling or doing something that maybe is, you know, irritating to us, to, you know, just to cultivate an attitude of acceptance and not seeing that person as you know, a problem or creating a problem, but maybe that they're suffering and that, you know, they might need some help, instead of seeing them as the enemy, sort of seeing them as the object of compassion, the object of understanding. So I guess I'd just like to conclude. We still have a couple of days before we go into retreat, but I'd just like to wish everybody a very successful 3-month retreat. I'll leave that for our reflection this evening.